Hi, I'm Deb Finan. I'm the mayor in Champaign, and I am joined by our deputy mayor, Tom Bruno. Tom, what district do you represent?
Well, I'm one of the three at-large city council members, so I am elected by the entire city.
Okay, and how long have you been on council?
I came on by an appointment in August of 1997, so this coming August will be 23 years.
And I would expect these last few months have been nothing like anything you have ever experienced as a councilman.
Sure. Well, you know, we've had some pretty trying times over the years, but this is really different. And this, I think, has been a real opportunity for those of us who serve on the city council to try to do the right thing and try to balance the pressures of public opinion with the needs of the community. So it's certainly been, you know, as we will all go to our graves saying it's been a once in a lifetime experience, nobody has ever faced anything like this.
So, you know, for me, you were sort of the canary in the coal mine. In the very beginning, you were really trying to get us to focus on the fact that the pandemic was coming, that we were not going to be immune from it. What drove that for you? I mean, why, when everybody else was still traveling and not thinking about it, were you sure taking it seriously?
You know, I think, look, I'm really proud of the entire city staff and all nine council members, because we really were pretty early adopters of the fact that we were dealing with a crisis. I was really just a matter of 3 or 4 days ahead of others. I was in a courtroom on March 11th, maybe that was, I think, a Wednesday. And the judge was having all the defendants walk right up to the bench and speak to her. And I'm thinking, well, I wouldn't be doing that. And I said something to her later when the courtroom was empty. And I think she sort of just rolled her eyes like, what are you talking about? And it was at that point when I sort of realized not everybody is paying attention as closely as I think we were to the news. But I also read some really great just little axioms that apply to dealing with something like this. If you wait for everybody to be on board before you take some drastic action, you've waited too long. By definition, you almost have to ask people to do something dramatic before they believe it's necessary. So that's a tough sell as a leader or a government official to say you have to take this seriously. It's tough to try to convince people to do that before there's widespread feeling that that's necessary.
I think it was tough as well. We were, you know, going into spring break. And I think, you know, my family in particular, my kids did not want to give up a spring break trip, and they didn't want to hear from me that it really was serious. So, you know, we were, as you said, a little bit ahead of the curve, maybe a week ahead of the curve in Champaign. And it was, I think, made harder by everybody just saying, but I want to go to Florida.
Yeah. Yes. And you know, if you read about the stages of grief, we all have gone through some grief for our loss of spring, loss of a summer, loss of events that we were looking forward to. You have denial and anger and acceptance and sadness. And we all went through that grievance, that grief process. My wife and I were sitting on a couple of really good tickets for a baseball game, Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers, in late March. And for a week or so, I still thought, oh, that might still happen. And then that was the week when the NBA canceled and the Major League Baseball postponed. And every one of those announcements was like hard to believe. but a sadness as it came over you. And then the University of Illinois coming around to, well, you know, don't come back after spring break. Those are all very hard to accept, those realities.
So I've been talking with your fellow council members, and one of the things I think people are curious about is, you know, how are you spending your days? What does this quarantine look like for you?
Well, I will tell you that I am not yet retired, even though a lot of people suggest I should be retired. So I practice law with my two sons, and our office is in Urbana. We locked the doors on March 13th. Nobody's been in our building since. We're continuing to pay our clerical staff. But we haven't, other than my sons will make a surgical strike to the office to retrieve mail. We haven't had the public in our office. We haven't gone there to work. We're all working from home. Luckily, in a kind of industry as an attorney, a lot of what I can do on my computer and by telephone, but it's difficult. It's a lot, you know, clients would like to meet with you face to face. We haven't been doing that. So certainly the volume of the work we do in our law office is reduced. All the many of the kinds of things that generated legal work for us are not happening in the community. So there's a lot less business to deal with. But I get up in the morning, I answer emails, I read a lot of news, I watch a lot of news on television. I'm playing some board games with my wife. I played chess for the first time since I was 9 years old. And we played four or five games with each other. I really dug up my vegetable garden and repaired it the way I was hoping to do for the last 20 years. Now I'm ready for to plant something in it if I can get some plants.
So are you missing grandkids? I assume you're seeing family members.
We're not having face-to-face contact with our grandkids, even though my wife and I have four grandchildren. They all live within a half a mile of our house, and it's heartbreaking not to hug them, touch them, have them over for a meal. We're doing a lot of interaction on Zoom or on FaceTime. But our oldest grandkid is four, and we have a couple of two-year-olds and a six-month-old. And those kids want to hug you, not email you. So that's been really heartbreaking, frankly grieving it. My youngest grandchild is a granddaughter who we're missing the first 6 months of her life. And that's been very, very sad for us. But I'd rather know that I'm going to be around for the rest of her life than these first 6 months. We're not taking any risks. On the spectrum of things, our family is being extremely conservative. The last time I was inside a retail store was March 11th, I think. I have not been inside a retail store since. We've done some curbside pickup of groceries with completely contactless transactions where the store worker places it in the trunk of my car and slams the trunk lid and we drive off. But I'm not going in a store, or I'm not eating carry out food, and I'm craving it. I was a restaurant foodie. I loved carry out meals. I loved to eat in restaurants. We're just missing it because I want to go to bed at night not worrying about whether I caught it from a symptomless person who's contagious.
So let's talk about city. You know, one of the things you're really good at, I think, is looking at long term and kind of maybe it's longevity of having been on council for a while. But, you know, you and I together, we weathered, you know, the recession in 2007 and the city came back to thrive You know, as you start thinking about how this is going to shape our future and the impact it's going to have on things, are there practices that are happening now that you think could impact our economy or our city in a positive way? Things that we ought to start thinking about as maybe these should be permanent changes?
Sure. One of the things is doing things electronically that we always thought needed to be done face-to-face. We're all going to get instantly a lot better at that. I refer back to my day job of being a lawyer, and the courts have always been very old-fashioned and slow to adopt new technology. And now we're forced to re-examine those things, and people who haven't used technology are forced to try it out. So we will make a quantum leap in terms of families and households that learn how to use FaceTime and Zoom and webinars. My daughter works for a government agency. She's working from home. She's a social worker, and she's calling on families, but she's calling on them from her computer and from her home. So a lot of that transition that would have happened gradually has happened much faster. That'll be a good thing in the long run. Like when a horrible storm passes through a community and takes down the dead old rotten trees, we're going to lose a lot of businesses, and that's really sad. But businesses will come back. Not all of them, but they will come back because when we get back to some sense of normalcy, there will be opportunities for new businesses to crop up and opportunities for the people who did this well will be the real survivors. And unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of damage along the way. It's going to be very stressful, difficult times for the city as an entity. The things that bring revenue to our city, that pay for the services that people have come to expect, those are all damaged. They're all severely going to be impacted. So the city relies on sales tax revenue. That's going to be way down. The city relies on food and beverage tax revenue. That's certainly way down. The city relies on the economic activity from 45,000 University of Illinois students, and that's going to be way down. And along the way, people are asking the city for help, and we're going to be even more strained. Our resources are even more strained than ever before. That's sad. That's really depressing. And okay, we'll roll up our sleeves and get through this together.
So to get off the sad, depressing topic, are there acts of kindness or community organizations that you've seen where you've thought, wow, what an amazing community we live in, that during all of this, these things are going on? Is there something you'd like to highlight?
Certainly. I can tell you within my own family, I have two sisters that live on the West Coast. We've had more communication in the last 45 days than we typically would. We're FaceTiming, emailing, having Zoom meetings with each other. I'm seeing that also locally. We have a kind of a social group of friends that we always took turns having meals at each other's houses. These are all people from Champaign and Urbana. We haven't done that now from the month of March or April, but instead we're having Zoom gatherings. I'm going to have one this evening, and there will be more people there trying to get a word in edgewise. There's eight different people of my generation, eight different couples, and all of our children scattered all over the United States. And everybody will log on, and we'll catch up with each other, maybe in a better way. So I'm seeing that with my neighbors as well. When I step out to the curb line in front of my house, people go out of their way to say hello to each other. People have been kind to each other. that's a good thing. And you see other people in the community and you realize, oh my gosh, how difficult it would be for somebody in that circumstance. I recognize that I'm a fortunate person who's had a good life and has some resources, but I think, how much harder this would be if I were dependent upon mass transit, if I had limited money to buy groceries with. I have a friend who runs a food bank in Rantoul, and he's been going to work and putting his own health at risk so that people who don't have food on the table can continue to get food from his food bank in Rantoul. So those acts of kindness are really heartwarming. The loss of a person I consider to be a pretty good friend, Tom Costello, it was a goosebump moment to see the outpouring of support when the neighbors and the folks from the MTD had a sympathy parade in front of Rose Costello's home. The dentist on Clark Park, Ellen Broadbent, those are very, very, it makes tears come to my eyes. It really does. We've had a level of loss of a lot of things that will change the rest of our lives. My parents I'm the oldest guy on the city council. My parents were really the World War II generation. Sure. And they lived as children through the Great Depression. They were born, they were elementary school kids when the Great Depression hit. They were in the prime of life when World War II hit. And that's how my parents met each other, was serving in World War II. My mother was in the Waves. My father was in the Army Air Force. They met at a mixer in Springfield, Massachusetts. But they were both serving their country. That shaped them forever. Now I look back at it and I realize, and my father has long been gone. He's been dead for 40 years. But I realize the stories that he told, the life experiences, the lessons that my mother taught me, were all shaped by their childhoods in the Great Depression, in their early 20s serving in the military, fighting a world war, not sure whether we were going to lose this country to foreign invaders. If you think this is scary, that was really scary stuff, and it shaped them. And then I came along, and it was all unknown to me. They didn't talk about it a lot, but I think back on it now, and I know that, in fact, I will tell a little story, that one of the things that my sisters and I were doing was kind of a deep dive into our family history. Both of our parents are dead now, so we have nobody else to ask about what was this like? What was that like? And we're sharing stories with each other and filling in gaps in our memory and realizing that those were the defining moments. There will come a time when my grandchildren think, well, that must have really been hard for my parents, my grandfather, whatever, because this is a challenging experience for them. They will hopefully realize that this shaped the world that they're going to live in.
You know, I have an 18-year-old high school senior, and so I've thought a lot about how this will shape that generation of kids, because they're kind of right on the cusp of real adulthood and getting ready to leave the nest and do their thing, and this is really going to change that experience for them and change who they are.
There is a young woman from Muhammad Seymour, who was the class president, the senior class president. The News Gazette wrote a little blurb about her. She posted something on Facebook that was kind of spontaneous. It was going to be kind of a rough draft of the speech she intended to give at graduation. And it's so powerful. I mean, I choked me up a lot to watch her say that. And I think all across America, not only the students that are missing some formal graduation ceremony, but have just been totally had that senior year in high school stolen from them, that senior year in college just stolen from them, the weddings that have been postponed. My daughter's getting married in October. we don't know what that ceremony is going to be like. We're all crossing our fingers that it resembles something of what she's been planning all her life, but it may be significantly different. And so, you know, we grieve as a family for those lost events. And that changes your perspective on life.
I would say, though, as a community, I think Champaign-Urbana has really done a tremendous job of compliance. It has not been easy, but our numbers are low, and they are low in part because we have a community that has taken this seriously and is really doing what we need to do.
You're absolutely right. You know, so there will always be people who might say, well, you know, it was much ado about nothing. You didn't need to do that. But our success is going to be in large part because we took it seriously. And we're a pretty, we're a above average intelligence community. And we pay attention to science and we pay attention to warnings. And I'm proud of our community. I'm proud of our state. God knows it would seem easier to just ignore all this, but it wouldn't be fair to the rest of the society. As this spreads through a nursing home, it's scary stuff.
So I have been asking everybody, since masks are going to be the new normal, and we're all going to have one, assuming you could actually get one that has what you want on it, either material or a logo, what do you want on your mask?
Gee, I don't know. The others around me would probably be like a big red X across where my mouth goes.
A fake mustache.
Two pieces of duct tape. I do put a mask on if I leave the inside of my house. We haven't had anybody in our house since the first week of March. My wife, myself, and my dog. But I'm not embarrassed to wear a mask, and we put a mask on, and I retrieve my newspaper at the end of the driveway wearing a pair of gloves. And I read it online. My wife quarantines the paper and reads it a few days later. So for her, we're still a week ago, probably. But, we're all in this together. I will say I went to a store, a retail store, for curbside pickup yesterday. And it was distressing to me to see people who weren't being careful. Because I think that's not fair to me. That's not fair to the folks in nursing homes. I wish everybody would be careful for the benefit of everybody else.
Yeah, I agree. So last thoughts about staying in touch with constituents and staying connected to the city. How are you going about that? And is there anything you want to share with them about, you know, how to get in touch with you if they need you?
Well, my email address is no secret, and people can email the city council. But I respond to email within, you know, hours, and always within minutes of laying my eyes on it. People can call my office and I'll get that phone call. People can email me and I'll get that. And I'm reading all the emails that people send generically to all nine council members. And that gives me a handle on what's going on in the community. I'm sympathetic to the hardship that this is causing private families and businesses, and we're going to just have to struggle through this because the city's not, you know, the city's going to suffer its own hardship. The city is just all of us put together, and we're all going to be in financial distress for a long time.
All right. Anything else you want to add?
No, I appreciate this opportunity, Deb, and thank you for doing it. And it's a challenging time. I'm glad you're at the helm during this because you're a good leader in this time of crisis, and I appreciate the attitude you've had towards it. It's been very helpful.
Well, thank you, and thanks for all the support. You know, we are really lucky to have a council that works really well together. I mean, to a person, we all you know, pitch in and work together. We might not always agree on every issue, but we are working together. And I certainly have heard nightmare stories from other mayors and other cities and other city managers. I mean, we really, staff and council has the community's best interest at heart, and we work really hard at it.
When you're dealing with an emergency, it's helpful to have everybody rowing in the same direction. This would be so much more challenging if we were dealing with internal strife or significant disagreements about the way to move forward. I like our approach. We're collaborative and trying to do the right thing, but it would be so much more difficult if we had to fight among ourselves as to how to best to deal with this emergency.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you for your time. Sure. And tell Beth hello.
No, will do.
And thanks, Deb. Good to see you. Bye-bye.
Bye.